IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport. Welcome back to the Playing Catch Up podcast, and welcome to May. We're in the postseason. Alyssa and Rachel, we have a lot to talk about, but first, just wanted to kick this off as it is One Love Week today on IL Women, 11 years since Yardley's death on Monday. And Amari, Tari, myself, and the Inside Lacrosse team have been really happy with the content we've been able to put up, creating awareness, sparking continued dialogue, and, you know, sharing some resources of what to do if you need help. Rachel, Alyssa, I know as coaches and working within the lacrosse community, Rachel, even through the PLL, the One Love Foundation is an organization that has really stretched and reached every part of this lacrosse community over the last decade.
Well, I think the One Love Foundation is doing amazing work. We took the workshop when I was on Team USA. And then when I was coaching at Yale, we also introduced it to our team. I think just what they're doing and encouraging healthy relationships and trying to teach players and coaches and everyone just what a healthy and loving relationship looks like really allows you to have that opportunity to really look at your own relationships and see, is this a healthy relationship? Is it unhealthy? Is there things that I can do better as a partner and all of that to, you know, their hashtag love better. So I think what they're doing is just so impactful and influential. And I think it's just amazing.
Yeah, I echo that. I think, you know, they're one of our assist partners at the PLL, and we did our when we launched Unleashed merch, we donated the proceeds of the funds to One Love. And, you know, I think what I love about One Love is that it's relationships across the board. So like it's friendships, it's family relationships, it's romantic relationships. I mean, like, you know, when as a mother, when you're raising kids and you want them to know what is right and what when something doesn't feel right, what to do about it. I think they're like practical tools, and it translates perfectly, right? It's not something up in the air. Like the workshop is so powerful. Like you leave knowing exactly what is right, what is wrong, and what to do about it. I just think they're doing pretty incredible work.
It is. And it is remarkable. You know, my senior year, May 2010, I vividly remember the day that I found out Yardley had been murdered by her boyfriend. And we had played the team, you know, just a few months prior. And I remember sitting actually at home that night and watching the news, and there was a clip of Yardley playing, and she was actually marking up against me in the dome. And it was footage that, like, I just burst out into tears. And I remember sitting there just so confused and genuinely, you know, relationship abuse, relationship violence, it was never on my radar. It was something that, you know, we grow up, we take health classes, right? You know, we take psychology classes, you know, we are on teams, and, you know, it was no one's fault at the time. It really just wasn't something that was talked about, and it wasn't in a lot of the education that we had gone through. And when you think about that and the tragic loss that the Love family endured with so many warning signs, the fact that I think it's remarkable, a decade later, it is so prevalently discussed, and they are such a visible organization. And again, I mean, the labor of love and pain and hurt that goes into what they do every single day, but the fact that the Love family and this foundation keeps on doing it daily to quite literally change lives. I mean, it gives me chills. I have goosebumps talking about it today. They have changed the conversation. They have created the conversation, and it is insane that a decade later, you know, the One Love Foundation has educated over 1 million individuals, and they keep on going. And again, you know, today on Inside Lacrosse, Amari and Tari host Katie Hood on their podcast, and we have some great content keeping up this week. And yeah, just obviously very grateful for everything that they do. And now we're going to continue on keeping the conversation on the action. It was a little May Madness last week. We got a taste of what's to come this weekend, and of course the rest of May. Rachel, we'll kick it off where you were. You were covering the Big Ten games. Northwestern, obviously, Maryland gave them quite a game in the championship, but not enough to stop this game train. Can you just talk about everything you saw this weekend in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great tournament. I think, you know, one of the things there's a lot of parity that showed. I mean, Hopkins took Maryland for the third time this season to one goal, and they're just so close. And you feel for Hopkins because it's like they get so close and they just can't quite get over the hump. I think Cassidy Spill set a record in the tournament that Zizi's game and beat 24-48 hours later because she's Zizi's game. But I thought there was a lot of great lacrosse. I could see all of those teams being competitive in the NCAA tournament if they get those at-large bids. So fingers crossed for the Big Ten teams that have fought so hard this year. And then Northwestern, I mean, they're, you know, Izzy Skane just took over. You know, they were down 5-1. It was their biggest deficit of the year. And she just kind of did, you know, what great players do. She just kind of put the team on her back and everybody followed suit. So I'm anxious for some of these Big Ten teams because I think they've had, you know, I talked about it a lot on the broadcast just because I feel so strongly about it. They don't have those games where you schedule it because you feel like it's going to be an easy game or it's a win, a guaranteed win on your schedule. And they just beat the crap out of each other all season, which we got to see. So hoping that comes into play when the tournament at-large bids are decided.
Yeah, I'm super excited to finally see some Big Ten teams go up against some other competition. I think we're all just guessing right now of where everyone stands. So it's like, you know, we obviously know Northwestern can compete with the top of the top, but then you have the rest of the teams who they've all beaten each other. They've all lost to one at one point in the season. And so it's just like, where does everyone fall is just the biggest question. And so that'll be really nice to be able to see where everyone's kind of lining up.
It's, I feel like we're very excited to see how the Big Ten stacks up against everybody else. They have to be beyond thrilled to just play somebody else. And, you know, I think that what we've been hearing rumblings out of the Big Ten, especially this magic 500 number that doesn't matter for the NCAA tournament criteria, right? Like, we'll get to that later. But some of these teams are like, you know, if we didn't have to play Northwestern and Maryland and Hopkins and Michigan every week, like, we'd be well above 500. So I think that those teams, especially, you know, you look at teams like Penn State, Ohio State, Rutgers, you know, they're keeping their fingers crossed. They're hoping that they get an opportunity to show the rest of the lacrosse world, no, like, we're very strong. Don't let our record fool you. Rachel, I thought this weekend, again, I mean, I feel like Alyssa and I are like your hype girls on Twitter when you're doing your show. I mean, maybe Mr. Murray too. I know he's a big fan.
Big fan.
huge fan. You have such a way, and I mean, obviously we're not surprised. We sit here and talk to you. And I think one thing I appreciate so much about you is always your honesty in every facet of life. But when I'm listening to you call a game, I feel like we're just sitting here talking about lacrosse and what we're seeing. You're so honest. You call it how you see it. That must be tough at times, especially as a defender. I love when you kind of say, I'm very biased, but the defenders can do no right. Like, how do you separate the, you know, profession? You want to be able to call this game professionally, but honestly, especially if a call is missed and you see that on a replay.
Yeah, it's hard because I know a lot of these coaches, I know a lot of these players, and I want the best for everybody. Like, I want them all to do well, but you have emotions around it. And I do try and call myself out because I think while safety is the most important thing when we're playing, but I, you know, the game has shifted since I played, and in a great way. Like, in some ways, I think the sticks, like, everybody's better and faster. Like, that is clear. But I also think defensively, they've made it really difficult to play good, solid defense. I mean, it's a self-start now, so you don't notice it as much, but there are whistles like every 12 seconds. And I understand why, but I'm also like, what are defenders supposed to do? You know, Alyssa, you talked about it in, I think it was a challenge that Emma Ward had at Syracuse, maybe, like, the defender steps in front, she plays good defense, and if the attacker falls to the ground, it's a call. And, like, whether there was contact or not, and I saw, and I called it out a couple times over the weekend, like, just because the defender, the attacker fell, doesn't mean she was fouled. Like if she's running full speed and she goes, leaves her feet, like she's probably gonna fall. And we're training attackers to do that, which is bad, or grab their head. And like, obviously someone gets hit in the head, they need to be carted. Or if somebody, you know, cross checks somebody to the ground, they need to be carted. But it's so blurry now where everything's just getting, it feels anti-defender, but yeah, it's hard. I think wanting to be honest and still wanting to be supportive of these teams because they're all trying so hard. But I feel like my goal when I'm broadcasting is if somebody turns on the TV and doesn't know lacrosse, like they're interested by what we're saying and they're learning about the game. And really at the end of the day, like we're trying to, you know, we're given this platform, but putting it on TV is so huge for us, trying to bring in a new audience.
Yeah, I think that's super important. And just like, you're so right. And as a coach, I've found, but a former attacker, I found myself almost, and I said it to my team a few weeks ago, I'm like, I don't know why, but like, for whatever reason, I love coaching defense. I think it's the mentality. Just because I wasn't that good of a defender doesn't mean that I don't love defense, but you're so right. And there's a trickle down effect down to the, from college down. And so, you know, what I'm constantly thinking about is like, how are we preparing these future college lacrosse players to, you know, be able to just hop right in and not have that huge leap of an adjustment. You know, I coached a game the other day where my defender who had her back to the ball was completely out of position. And that's something, you know, that she would have to work on in general, but she was out of the play, got a yellow card because the girl missed a pass and it hit her in the face. And because she grabbed her face, it was a yellow card on my team. And, you know, it's besides the point that it's a yellow card against my team. If I was just watching that game, I'd be disappointed because that girl now gets an 8-meter and her team is man up for 2 minutes because in high school it's not releasable. That's a huge turn of events. And that's a game-changing call if it's down the stretch. And not to mention, the girl missed the pass. So she's not being, you know, she's not learning, I need to get a better stick to be able for that not to happen. She's getting rewarded. And, you know, it's a missed call. It happens, whatever. But it's just stuff like that where it's like, gosh, the defense cannot do anything right.
And I feel like it's almost disrespectful to how good they are. Like when you watch, you know, Lizzie Colson, president of the fan club, clearly. But when you watch a Lizzie Colson or really any good defender, and most defenders in college are good defenders, right? They are playing in college. They are in control of their bodies. They understand the way their bodies work and how strong they are. Like it's like you don't trust them to not hurt somebody. When if they're out of control, that's one thing, but when they're just like playing hard and tough and a little physical, that's not necessarily bad. It just is like we're training, as you said, people to like grab their face, and like your young kids are like, what is defense going to look like when they get to college if they've not been able to really body up somebody their whole lives? I don't know.
Right. Or what is their stick work going to look like if they weren't trained? Like, I need to be able to catch with pressure on me. It's just, you've got these youth players that have this huge aspiration of wanting to play at the next level, but they're not being forced to raise their game to that level because they're getting bailed out.
It was, you know, on Sunday again, I feel like I had like whiplash. I'm turning back between Big Ten Championship and ACC Championship, which like NCAA committee, please fix it. NCAA quarterfinals, I do not want to have to do that with three or four screens running. But neither here nor there. We'll talk about that next week. You know, I tweeted this out during the game and I said, you know, we've seen many fouls, checks to the head, dangerous shot, et cetera, in multiple games not called because there was no reaction from the hit player. We've seen calls go the other way with a little reaction. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we saw a dangerous propelling shot that was not called in favor of the defender that was hit. And it was, you know, she got hit by a ball and she didn't react. You know, if she grabbed her leg, if she grabbed, you know, would she get the call? Maybe, but is that what we're really teaching? And then on the other side, I mean, I think, you know, player, we've talked about it at length, like Jamie Ortega, like sharpshooting Ortega is out there just getting dropped. And, you know, a lot of the cross checks are getting called, but sometimes, you know, she is so fast the way she dodges in when defenders are collapsing, she takes a stick check to the head. We saw it this weekend. And she gets hit in the head. And because she doesn't grab her head or she doesn't flail, sometimes those calls are missed. So it is, it's like you want to, and I get it. And I said it and I tweeted it, you know, I have nothing but respect for referees. You know, they are integral in the continued growth of this game. Their job is so hard. Our rule book is still so gray, you know, not black and white. And there's so many different things that a referee calling a women's lacrosse game and a girls lacrosse game has to handle. It's like, you're watching for 3 seconds. You're watching for shooting space. You're watching for this. You're watching for checks to the head. Like I am not complaining about referees not doing their job. It's just like, I don't know if there is an answer or what the answer is. And again, for Rachel, you know, one thing that I love, you know, I think Sheehan handled it beautifully during the championship game. You did a great job in the Big Ten championship game. When there is a replay, as the color commentator, if you don't call that out, you're not doing your job.
Yeah, I think that's
the glory. We have the benefit of...
I think that's the like the wonderful thing about instant replay is that we have that. But of course, as an official, you don't have that. So, yeah, sorry to cut you off, Rachel.
Oh, I was literally going to say the same thing. I mean, there was a call at one point. I'm like, "Where's Dean Blandino and Gene Steratore in the booth? Like, can we get another look at this and some evaluation?" Because, yeah, I mean, to your finale, there are so many nuanced rules, and I think that's where it's like when we want this game to be more mainstream, like somebody turning it on has to understand what they're seeing, you know? And like, we've heard that feedback from people in college. Like, I don't understand. Like, they would come to our games and be like, what is going on? Like, why are there so many whistles? Why are you freezing? Why are you doing this? And we've cleaned a lot of that up, but still, like, there's just too many little things that complicate it and make it really hard for the refs, I think.
I just wonder about like moving forward. Like, we're always thinking of ways to improve the game, and you know, this would be difficult at the lower levels like high school and younger, but with where technology is right now, every game is being filmed and all of that. I would love to see maybe the option of, and it would be kind of cool to have a coach's challenge, like 1.5 or something like that, and you lose a timeout. I think that would be awesome. Like, because there are momentum shifts that are huge, right? Like, I'm even thinking, and I hate to bring up Syracuse because I obviously know that everyone knows I watch Syracuse games because I went there. But like, but in the BC game, there was a shot that there was a illegal follow through that was missed. And it led to, you know, a momentum shift, and BC came back in the semifinal game. And, you know, you're going to have those. I'm not, they may have had a comeback regardless of that goal or not, but those are big time moments that really can shift the energy. And I'm sure if Gary had that challenge flag and was able to throw it, that he would have wanted to. And then it's, you know, on the flip side, I'm sure there's calls that Acacia would have been like, I absolutely want to challenge this, just to kind of help your team get that edge. And so I think it would be something to at least talk about, because the technology is there at the college level right now.
I mean, when I first started playing this game, there were no hard boundaries. I'm coaching my team, my high school team, and when we're working on draw work, I'm like, you guys don't understand how lucky you have it. And I feel like my dad, like an old curmudgeon, because I'm like, when I was in college, each team had 5 players on the draw circle, and like on the draw, and then 4 on the circle, and then you didn't have to hold behind the line. Like, now you have so much space, like draw, and like these girls just look at me like, you're ancient, like you don't know. So it's like, if we're talking about that now, like think how far we've, I mean, I feel like that's the theme of what I've been saying from the One Love conversation all now, like think how far we've come. Like, I do think, especially with continued, you know, there has been such an emphasis on getting this game live streamed and on TV, and you know, so many games are so accessible now. So in 5 to 10 years, or maybe even sooner, will we see a challenge? Will we see, you know, film reviews, especially in a national championship game or semifinal game when there is multiple camera angles? I'm curious, you know, I guess we'll see where it goes, but keeping along, we can continue. I feel like we kind of like hit the Big Ten and got off tangent. We get off tangent quite a bit. ACC, A10, Big South, you know, let's talk about the ACC for a second. It was a gauntlet of a tournament. Alyssa, you're the only one of us that's actually played in an ACC tournament. Are these athletes like walking on Monday, or are they just like in ice baths for the whole day? I mean, again, Rachel, you said these athletes are bigger, faster, stronger than they've ever been, and they're going a million miles an hour at one another. By the time Syracuse and North Carolina get off that field on Championship Sunday, every inch of their body has to be aching.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just remember when I was playing, we were in the ACC for one year, and a nice change that they've done is have the games Wednesday, Friday, Sunday. When I was playing, it was quarterfinals Thursday, semifinals Saturday. I think it was one, there were back some back-to-back. It may have been Thursday, Friday breaks, then game Sunday. But yeah, I actually remember, because it was at BC, and I remember being like in between whatever our break day was, being like, yeah, my legs feel fine. Like, I feel fine. I feel fine. Just keep trying to tell myself I feel fine. And then we have to go play Maryland in the championship. I'm like, I don't feel fine, but I feel really slow. But yeah, I mean, I give a lot of credit to those teams for just battling it out. It really takes a toll on your body, and I'm sure that they are really embracing this, you know, recovery week in a sense. But that's what we were saying, where it comes down to having the higher seeds is such a huge advantage. And I felt that way when I was playing in it. It's, you know, Maryland versus the second seed. Like, we had to go play UNC to make it to the championship, and they were not just as good as they are now, but they were darn good. And so it was a challenge, and your body takes a beating.
Absolutely. And, you know, we saw the fight that Virginia Tech, Louisville, Virginia, Duke, Notre Dame put up. I thought Boston College played remarkable. I think especially in the last few weeks, BC has shown, okay, we're right there with Syracuse. We might not be where North Carolina is, although we really want another crack at them. I think BC has separated themselves. You know, I think North Carolina and Syracuse separated themselves, and I think BC has separated themselves from the pack. And again, I thought Charlotte North was remarkable. Bell Smith and Emma Ward in the BC Syracuse game, Melissa, you said it. It is so incredibly impressive that freshmen are turning heads this year and this year alone, because it is such a veteran heavy field with those fifth year graduate transfers and returners and, you know, seniors and juniors. I feel like we don't hear the names of underclassmen. You know, we don't even hear a ton of sophomore names, but the fact that Bell Smith and Emma Ward turned heads this weekend was so fun to see. Rachel, do you think, again, we'll get to the NCAA selection later, do you think we are in a world where all ACC teams could be playing in the NCAA tournament? Where do you kind of see these teams going from here?
I don't think that Virginia Tech gets in, and I think Louisville probably not either. I think it depends on some of the outcomes from the tournaments this weekend, see how people do. I would say everybody but them is a yes. Those, I think, a Virginia Tech's probably a no based on just their record. I think Louisville, it's going to be dependent on how other people perform. If somebody that's like bubbled with them does better, it might push them out.
I think what we will see, or my guess would be, that three of the four top four seeds are ACC, because I totally agree. I think BC, Syracuse, and UNC have separated themselves. Obviously, UNC has been separated, but those two teams, like, it could go either way any game. Just because Syracuse came out on top the last two doesn't mean that they would, if they played for a fourth time, which seems incredible that they would play four times, but you never know.
In the A-10, UMass made a huge statement. And, you know, honestly, I credit St. Joe's. I thought we were going to see a UMass-Richmond championship game, and St. Joe's blew the front door off of the Spiders bus. But Richmond has just powered through its schedule. You know, I kind of akin UMass to like a Stony Brook. You know, they have not been able to show us, especially in a season like 2021 with so many COVID restrictions. I don't think they've really been able to show lacrosse fans what they're capable of. You know, earlier this year, they had a tough loss to Boston College. I think they picked up a lot of the pieces. They haven't been able to get a ton of, you know, quote unquote, like quality opponents on their schedule to grab a quality win, which the NCAA selection committee would take into consideration. Luckily, they took matters into their own hands, grabbed an AQ from the A10. I think UMass, especially with, you know, looking at how this team can get the draw and how easily they can put the ball in the back of the net. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players with double-digit assists this year. I think UMass is going to be a super dark horse team in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think they have a great program, and they're just have, I mean, the number of A10 championships that they've racked up over the years, it means something. So, you know, the history and the coaches and everyone is experienced, and that means something in championship play and NCAA tournament play. So I think that is a huge advantage, even if the players that are on the team or some players haven't experienced that because they're underclassmen. Just knowing that that's the sort of program that you're in just gives you that confidence and trust in the system.
And of course, High Point grabbed the Big South AQ. And looking ahead to this weekend, Rachel, you mentioned it. There's a lot of conference action that these bubble teams are going to be sitting, watching from the outside in, crossing their fingers that nothing crazy happens, right? Like if you're Louisville, if you're Virginia Tech, if you're Michigan, if you're Ohio State, if you're Penn State, you're hoping that, hey, maybe Drexel does win out the CAA. Nobody better upset Stony Brook in the America East. Like those are the type of scenarios that bubble teams are looking for this weekend. That said, we each picked a conference tournament. We're excited to watch this weekend. Rachel, who do you have?
Stony Brook in the America East. You mentioned them. They haven't had the opportunity. They've been pretty dominant in their conference. They haven't had the opportunity to really go outside too much. But wanted to mention, they were profiled in the New York Times yesterday, which is huge for the sport. I mean, pretty impressive to be have your team profiled in the New York Times. Also, I think Taryn O'Miller had like a heck of a senior day. I think she had 8 goals. So like coming on hot at the right time. And then shout out to Allie Kennedy's parents for the pregame hype. I actually hope this doesn't go back. This is one of those COVID things I hope stays. I got to, when I was broadcasting the Syracuse game, I got to watch, you know, we're on early. So we got to watch that ceremony and all the parents sent a video message to their daughters. And I was fully like choking back tears, just watching the parents, just how much, you know, we all have lax parents. So how much it means to them. And then the daughter's reaction. And Allie Kennedy's parents were like hype squad to the max. I mean, they went all in. Everybody was laughing. I think, you know, it's just fun to see those moments, you know, in a regular senior day, there isn't any of that. So let's like, I vote to keep that next year and then put it on the TV because it makes for good television.
It is. Yeah. I mean, like you mentioned, I do love that aspect. I think that credit to colleges and, you know, these college programs and these coaches that have really done a great job to work with their communications departments and make senior day special for these seniors. You know, we haven't seen senior day include parents or families on field. But yeah, some of these videos that we're seeing and the social media accounts sharing has been pretty awesome. I loved that. Alyssa, what conference tournament are you keeping a close eye on this weekend and why?
I'm excited for the Big East tournament. I'm hoping to see a UConn-Denver rematch. In case anyone has forgotten, they went into triple overtime and then Denver won the second matchup. So I just feel like they are really, you know, they're well-matched, evenly played team. So I look forward to that. And, you know, my buddy Bryce Queener, who is formerly in Austin, Austin living guy. He's a very passionate about Denver lacrosse, assistant coach there. And I think he's doing a great job and just puts his own spin on the game. So I think that they're awesome. And I look forward to watching them play. I think it was Hannah Liddy with that crazy behind the back feed from X. I could be getting the player wrong, but it went viral, I'm pretty sure. And it was just insane. So look forward to seeing some more of that from Denver.
I love that. And staying out west, we're going to go even further west for my pick. I am so excited to watch the Pac-12 tournament. I mean, you look at a team like Stanford that's undefeated. So, you know, at first glance, you might think, oh, well, they're just going to run away with it. Everyone else is beating each other up quite a bit. It's insane to think that Stanford's not a crazy front runner. I don't think that this conference has a front runner, which, again, is so exciting come tournament time. I think anything could happen. You look at the potential matchup, you know, Cal and Arizona State, they're playing on Wednesday, today, as we're recording this. Stanford takes on the winner tomorrow. Colorado USC will play on Thursday, championship on Saturday. Now, I mentioned those teams. Stanford had a 2-goal game versus Cal, 1-goal game versus Arizona State, 1-goal game versus USC, and a 1-goal game versus Colorado. So again, I think that when you're winning that many 1-goal games, credit to Danielle Spencer and her staff. It's very tactical when you're in a close game and you're able to pull it out, let alone you're able to pull it out, as I mentioned, that many times. And I think it helps when you have a veteran heavy team the way that Stanford does. You have players that have been in those situations before. Ali Bayako is playing ridiculous this year. She's a sharpshooter. Galen Liu. You look at Michaela Watson, Daniela McMahon. This is a veteran heavy team. And I think that they've been able to remain steady and not get too hot, not get too cold in these close games. But as I mentioned, those 1-goal games, you know, USC, Colorado, Arizona State, they're looking at a scenario. I think it's a must win to get in. I think that, again, crazier things could happen. I think this year, the at-large discussions going on in the NCAA tournament committee room, I'd love to be a fly on the wall. When you're comparing a team like Arizona State to Ohio State, when you're comparing a Virginia Tech to a USC, you know, they don't have really common opponents. So looking to what those teams need to do this weekend, I think every team other than Stanford and maybe even Stanford has to win to get in. And whenever that's the case, it's always really fun for a conference tournament. All right, looking ahead, we talked about this on the last podcast of our favorite conference tournament memory, but then Rachel had to remind us that she actually didn't have a conference tournament in the Ivy League back in the day. Wah, wah. Rachel likes to beat Dartmouth, we get it. You know, looking at, we'll talk about NCAA selection show, but why don't we first just talk about our favorite NCAA tournament memory, Rachel, go.
Oh man, there's a lot of them, but I think superstition-wise, there's two, and they're both really just superstitions. Things like you like will see when there's nothing there when you really want something badly enough. So we're sitting at the Final Four banquet my junior year at the dinner, and Chris always wore her 1994 championship ring every day, and he like, you see her coaching with it and you're just like looking at like, that's what we want, that ring someday. And we're sitting at dinner and she looks down and the diamond is missing from her ring, like out of nowhere. And we're like, oh my God, it's because you need a new one. Like, we're going to win. Like, we totally talked ourselves into it. I mean, we did win and she did get a new ring, but it just, the timing of her like noticing it was wild. And then the next year, this was a little bit of a stretch. We were at the Final Four dinner again. And Tara Hardiman, she was eating like she opened her crackers to like eat the soup and they were double wrapped. And she was like, back to back wrappers, guys, like there's two. And we all were like, fate, like we're going to win. I mean, we won, had nothing to do with crackers or diamonds, but just those funny things. Like, I mean, it literally had nothing to do with anything, but we were so like eyes on the prize focused that any little sign we saw like had to mean that we were going to win the game.
That's so funny.
Oh my gosh. Maybe we should have ended with Rachel because she obviously won the national championship.
Yeah, she's like, so many good memories. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. I'm like, I get back every year, ultimately ending with tears. Alyssa, what's your favorite NCAA tournament memory?
Well, just you mentioning the banquet had me remembering my sophomore year when we were at the banquet, and at Syracuse, there were some seasons varied, but sometimes all you would have to do to have dessert was just sing karaoke on the bus back. Like, some teams were really strict about the the dessert rule. Like, no, we're not going to have dessert. Like, we're like, our body is a temple, whatever. And we're like, we'll just sing and it'll be fine. But at this banquet, they're like calling teams up to get dessert. Like, okay, like so-and-so can get dessert. And like, some people just wouldn't get up. They call Syracuse and we're all cheering. We're like, yeah, dessert, like just going crazy. We're like, okay, not everyone reacts to this the way that we do. We're like, we'll have yours, doubling up on the dessert. But that same year, I don't know if I like told you guys this on the podcast or whatever, but definitely, I mean, an unforgettable moment was our big comeback against Florida at Stony Brook in 2012. I think it was like 13 minutes left, 7-goal comeback into double overtime. And, you know, we it was unforgettable. So much so that I think I may have mentioned this, how we have it DVR'd on my my parents' TV. And I was like,
had to watch it.
Yeah. And before we got married, like, we had to show my future husband the game, and it ended up that we still won. So, as a rite of passage.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I don't know. We had some great memories. I would honestly, I feel like this stays with the theme of my conference tournament memory. My freshman year, we drew Vanderbilt in the first round, and Syracuse Vanderbilt, I'm not sure that we've played since. It's not a matchup that Syracuse plays often, or maybe even ever beyond that game. And it was cool. We got to charter a flight down, and we went to Nashville, which I haven't been to Nashville since, but it was just kind of that freshman year bliss of, oh, wow, this is what we're supposed to be doing. This is so cool. Yeah. It's going to be like this every year. You know, we won the Big East tournament that year. So we knew that we were in. We were excited to see where we were going. We went down. It was the first NCAA tournament win for any Syracuse team. So it was really cool to kind of, you know, make history, but as a freshman, not really understanding what making history meant. Mm-hmm. And just the ability to kind of stay in it and then, you know, continue to chip away the 4 years after that. But that was such a cool memory. And the seniors that year, Jill DePetris was a senior on the team, Chelsea Strodel, Chelsea Lavelle now, they were just a really special group of leaders. And I think that, you know, we might not have been the most talented team in the Big East, but I think we had like the best leadership genuinely. I mean, the team just loved each other. And I think that really set an example for how the rest of us on the team wanted to be and what we wanted to do. So I need to get back to Nashville. That was a great trip.
Nashville is so fun. Maybe we should do a playing catch up episode live from Broadway. Let's do it.
Yes. Oh, now that everything's opening back up, we'll do it.
That'd be so funny. We can karaoke after dessert too.
We can.
I think I play better with a little dessert in my system. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, everybody does.
Who wouldn't?
I know.
Who wouldn't?
Oh my goodness. That's so this Sunday, obviously we're going to be seeing a lot of conference tournaments play out, but this Sunday is Selection Sunday. We've all been there. Sometimes it's nice to have that confidence, of course, coming off a conference championship, knowing you're in, wondering who you're playing with. There is also, I mean, it's kind of like a sick and twisted excitement of like the butterflies in your stomach of like, oh my gosh, are we going to make it? Where are we going? Are we hosting? It's an exciting day. And of course, disappointing day for some teams that sit on the bubble and they just sit there waiting for their name to be called. And it ultimately isn't. There's a lot going on. This year, the NCAA selection committee, I think, has one of the hardest jobs out there. The majority of the selection criteria that we've seen in the past is not even on the table, right? So like RPI, strength of schedule, you know, those factors are not on the table because of the restrictions we've seen in certain conferences, the Big Ten only being able to play themselves. Patriot League has been incredibly limited. Rachel, what do you think this eye test, you know, basically the selection committee watching teams that don't get to play each other or maybe even common opponents, what do you think of that and how will that shape these at-large selections?
I mean, I think they need to like take the RPI, put it in the garbage disposal and call it a day. Like Northwestern being ranked 8 when they're undefeated and their average win percentage or win gap is 10.5 goals. How could they be 8? The eye test is going to be everything this year. I mean, it's the best, unfortunately, the best way they have to do it, and they're guessing a little bit and trying to really, like, it's just not going to be as statistical. It's going to be a little bit more like an eye test, like you're saying, descriptive. What do I think would happen? Not like, what do the numbers tell me? Because the numbers aren't going to tell you the whole story this year. So I feel for the committee and these coaches that are, you know, they're just unsure. I think usually you have like a sense of where you're going to be based on RPI, but it's really just kind of a wild card this year.
And Alyssa, you mentioned because of the, I mean, question marks, or maybe again, it could be like the NCAA committee totally crushes this and they do an incredible job of kind of scouting that talent. But like we saw in the men's basketball tournament, you know, we have the potential to see some major quote unquote upsets. And I say quote unquote, because maybe we've just been ranking these teams incorrectly the whole year. You know, do you think that we'll see some seeded teams sent home packing maybe earlier than we have in seasons past.
I definitely think there's that potential, right? Like, we're so used to knowing at least head to head. So if, you know, Northwestern played Syracuse and, I don't know, or lost or beat Syracuse, but then Syracuse beat Maryland or whatever, there, you can base off and make your best guess based off the head to heads. And even if teams didn't play, based off of who they beat, you can make that assumption. But there was not that much out of conference games, so you're literally just guessing, like you guys have been saying. So we don't know where they stack up, and then without the Ivy League being in play, it's just a huge question mark. So, you know, we could be seeing complete blowouts, or we could be seeing upsets, or we could be seeing the most evenly matched games, and we just have no idea. I think it would be awesome if we just see really evenly matched games, because it just will show how much parity there is across the Division One. But, you know, we might not be there yet when playing those higher end seeds. But who knows? I mean, this might be the opportunity that conferences like the A-10 and the Big South are looking for, because we're not usually seeing that many at-large bids from conferences like that, because usually we have another conference in play. So I think it just might be interesting to see that now these teams that may have not had a shot getting into the tournament with an at-large bid will have that opportunity.
Absolutely. You know, I think teams are, Rachel's brokenhearted that the Ivy's not playing this year, but I think every other conference is super pumped about it, right? So it's like, it's one more at large up for grabs, which is pretty incredible when you're that last 1, 2, 3 bubble team waiting to get in. You know, I do think what's interesting is if you look at RPI, which again, won't be taken into consideration, right now Northwestern is 6 in the RPI. And I have to say, again, we're way speculative. I feel like there's no shot they're not number 2, right? I mean, we say North Carolina, probably far and away the number 1 seed. How can you put anyone else above them? And the only other team that really would be in consideration, again, it's Northwestern, hasn't lost either. You know, North Carolina's played the ACC and then some, and has done a remarkable job this year. So if North Carolina, Northwestern's, you know, 1-2, you know, we look at Syracuse, Boston College, probably 3-4. You know, where does a Stony Brook fit into this? Also, Drexel, again, they've had a little bit more ability to schedule outside of the CAA. And again, RPI means nothing, but Drexel's RPI is 4 right now. So, you know, does Drexel get a legitimate shot? Are they seeded in this tournament? I'm just so interested to see how everything plays out. And as we said, a lot of it is decided this weekend. You know, if Drexel wins out, if Stony Brook wins out, if Florida wins out, Stanford wins out, they seal their fate. But if they don't, some crazy things could happen.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
It's well, obviously it's the best time of year. We love to cover it. We will be bringing you content this weekend, and we'll be back next week. Thank you guys so much. Rachel, as we mentioned, it's always the Play and Catch Up podcast powered by Unleashed Overnight. What's going on with Unleashed Overnight these days? Give us an update.
We are getting ready. Spots are filling up. Obviously, we've got Kylie and Colleen McGarity coaching. Super excited. Hoping Katie DeFeo will make a special appearance. But check us out at Unleashed WX for all the details.
All right. Head to Unleashed and keep tuned to Isle Women this weekend. And we will see you back next week.
Whoop, whoop.
See you guys.
Isle Women Podcast. The source of her sport. We'll be right back.